We're continuing our study through the book of Genesis. We are up to Genesis chapter 39. And of course, we remember that the last time we saw Joseph, his brothers had sold him to some Ishmaelite traders who traded in everything, including human slavery. And they were carrying him off to Egypt. And in fact, at the end of chapter 37, it says that they sold him to a man by the name of Potiphar. Chapter 39, after having taken that short break to talk about Judah and Tamar, and we talked about the importance of that being in there because Judah is the line through which Christ came. And so we spent some time on that. I want us to notice a little bit of difference in the character of Judah and Joseph. Judah, of course, getting himself involved in that sexual sin with his own daughter-in-law. Not knowing at the time, of course, that it was his daughter-in-law, but still being involved, thinking that she was a prostitute, and getting involved with her. Joseph, on the other hand, is made of stronger stuff, I guess you could say. And he resists the sexual temptation that's put before him. But it's amazing sometimes the things that we allow ourselves to think. It's amazing the lengths to which we talked about Satan's devices some this morning. And Satan has made great inroads in our way of thinking to the point where on one occasion studying this story about Joseph and his temptation by Potiphar's wife, her wanting him to have an affair with her, and we talked about him rejecting that. I was discussing that with some young people on one occasion, and one of the young men said, "Well, but it would have been all right if he'd have loved her, wouldn't it?" Now, these were people who remember from the church. These were kids who had grown up going to church every Sunday morning, every Sunday night, and every Wednesday night. They were always there. And yet, here was this young man, about 13 or 14, or maybe 15 years old, who says, "But it would have been all right if Joseph had slept with Potiphar's wife if he'd have loved her." Kind of sad, the state that our society has infiltrated the Lord's church to the point where our young people are confused on such basic moral issues as to whether it'd be all right for a man to sleep with another man's wife. But aside from that, as we look at chapter 39, I want us to remember, and we've been emphasizing this throughout the book of Genesis, and it's true throughout the scriptures, God is the main character. God is the focus of this book. And we notice that in chapter 39 with how many times the Lord is mentioned. Talks in verse 1 of Joseph being sold to Potiphar. And then in verse 2, the Lord was with Joseph. So sometimes heard preachers talk about, "Oh, Joseph, he was all alone down there in Egypt. He'd been away from his father and away from his family, and he was all alone." He wasn't all alone. The Lord was with him. It's after last Wednesday night about the fact that Noah wasn't and his family weren't alone in that ark. God was with them. The same thing here. The Lord is with Joseph. Now, I know, and you know too, that having the Lord with you is not quite the same as having a flesh and blood, living, breathing human being with you. It's a little different. But still, Joseph wasn't alone. And Joseph realized that he wasn't alone, and we'll see that as we move into further into the events that take place in Joseph's life while he's in Egypt. But so many times we spend so much of our time focused on the relationship with Joseph and Potiphar's wife and that temptation, and it's certainly, he's a good example to young people of how to avoid temptation, how to get away from temptation, but we forget. This is not about Joseph. It's about God. It's about how the Lord is working through these circumstances to bring His plan to pass. Now, the Bible just wanted to tell stories about things that happened to people. There are a lot of stories out there that could be told. There are libraries full of books about the events in people's lives, from current all the way back, as far back in history as people were writing. But that's not what the Bible is about. The Bible tells of how God created a man and a woman, put them in a perfect garden, and they sinned, and so now God is doing what He has to do to bring about their redemption, to bring mankind back into that kind of relationship with Him that they had back there in the garden. Now, we don't see the ultimate fulfillment of that until we get on into Revelation and see heaven described and God there on the throne and all of the saved getting to be there in heaven and again have the tree of life and restored to that relationship. And we don't see that until we get over there. But all of the rest of the Bible is leading us to that. All of the Old Testament is leading us to this Messiah that was promised back in Genesis chapter 3. And Joseph, while God loves him and God cares about him and God is with him here in Egypt, this isn't about Joseph. If Joseph had never been sold by his brothers, God would have taken care of things another way. But God used the circumstances to further His plan. And we talked about that with Judah and Tamar. Certainly God wouldn't have chosen for Judah to have an incestuous type relationship with his daughter-in-law, but since it happened, he used it. He took advantage of that situation. And time and again, throughout the Bible and throughout history, God has taken advantage of even the sinful things that humanity does to bring about His blessings on mankind. He's always looking for a way to further His plan. And it's all something that He knows how it's going to work out and how it's going to play out in the end. But the Lord was with Joseph and he was prosperous. He was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. He was in Potiphar's house and he was a slave there, but he was prospering. Now, slavery is not usually a condition that goes hand in hand with the word prospering. Usually, slavery goes hand in hand with suffering and poverty and being abused and things like that. But Joseph apparently had found a good master. And with the Lord being with him as well, he was in good shape. He was prospering. In fact, verse 3 said that he was prospering so much that Potiphar, his master, notices. He notices that everything this guy touches just turns to gold. Everything he does works out right. And he recognized that this wasn't just a man who was good at his business. He recognized that God was behind this. That the Lord was blessing him. And that the Lord was with Joseph. And his master recognized that. Pretty wise fellow to see that. And then he took advantage of that. Since he noticed that the things that Joseph touched and the projects that Joseph got involved with prospered, what did Potiphar do? Well, he did the logical thing. He promoted him, put him up over everything. He said, well, you know, if this little area was doing well because Joseph was over that, let's put him over everything and then everything can do well. And that's just what happened. He made him the overseer of his whole house. Everything. And then, once he had been made the overseer, verse 5 tells us, from the time he was made overseer, the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. Again, the Lord loved Joseph. He cares about Joseph. Joseph is one of his children. Joseph's not the one through whom the Messiah is going to come, but Joseph is still a descendant of Abraham, a descendant of Isaac. His father is Israel, Jacob. And so he loves Joseph, and he's protecting him, and he's caring for him. When you think about slavery, you think about the situations that Joseph could have wound up in. You think about where he could have been. But he was in a good place where he got to be in command, in essence. Where he was not being abused. Where he had free reign of the house. And the Lord blessed him and blessed the Egyptian who was his master. Blessed everything in his house. Blessed everything in the fields. Blessed everything. Well, we saw that with Abraham. We saw that with Isaac. We saw that with Jacob too. That it just seemed like they had the Midas touch. But it wasn't the Midas touch. It was God's touch, because God's hand was on them, because they were His chosen people. And Joseph is one of God's chosen people. Well, things seem to be going pretty well. About the only thing that could get any better is if Joseph could get his freedom and have his own place, right? Have his own land and his own house. And then things would be perfect. But you know, the devil never sits by quietly when God's working. We talked about that this morning, that Satan has a plan to try to beat God. He's not going to just sit back and let God win. He's going to fight. And so Satan, well, the Lord has His servants, Satan's got his too. So Satan got one of his servants riled up to get involved in this fight. Joseph is at such a point. Notice verse 6 says that Potiphar had left all that he had in Joseph's hand. He didn't know anything he had except the bread that he ate. Well, that's some trust. Would you trust somebody else to take care of your property, your possessions, so much that you wouldn't even know except that, well, I got to eat today, so things must be all right. Potiphar didn't know anything about what was going on in his own house. Now, maybe that was part of his downfall. If he'd have known a little bit about what was going on, he would have maybe known a little bit about what his wife was like. Potiphar's wife wasn't a very good woman. In fact, verse 7 says that after this had been going on for a little while, things were looking good, everything's going okay, can't go good forever. What's the saying? Into every life, some rain must fall. Well, Joseph, as if he didn't have enough rain in his life by being sold by his brothers and taken prisoner to Egypt and sold as a slave, as if that wasn't enough, here comes Potiphar's wife, and she sets her eye on him. Now, I don't know how old Potiphar's wife was. I don't know if she was close to Joseph's age or if she was an older woman hoping for a younger man. I don't know the circumstances, but she saw this young Hebrew man, and she liked what she saw. In fact, she liked what she saw in him better than she liked her own husband. Part of that probably has to do with the fact that Potiphar doesn't seem to ever be around much. Seems like every time Joseph's doing this and Joseph's taking care of everything, where's Potiphar? He must be off being Pharaoh's servant. He's watching over Pharaoh's troops. He's one of Pharaoh's officers. He's taking care of his responsibilities at work and neglecting his house. And I guess maybe neglecting his wife enough that she starts looking somewhere else. We don't have necessarily evidence of that, except that he didn't know what was going on in his own house. He didn't even know anything about it except that Joseph gave him food to eat every day. He let Joseph take care of everything. Now, if Joseph was a dishonest man, Potiphar would be just broke by now. Joseph could have been stashing away some money embezzling a little here and a little there. Joseph could be very wealthy. He could have stolen the man blind by now and he'd have never known it. But Joseph's not that kind of person. Joseph is a man of integrity. He's one that fears God. That's one of the reasons the Lord's with him. But she started looking at Joseph and she said to him, "Come lie with me." And I'm sure after he lied with her, she would have wanted him to lie with her, because she wouldn't have told her husband the truth about what had happened. Lying leads to lying in so many cases. These little liaisons, these little infidelities, the little thing, but she's been wanting this for a while. She's been figuring it. Come on, come be with me. And he said no. He turns her down. Now, there's no indication that she was some ugly, hideous woman and that he turned her down because she just scared. The indication is that he just knew he wasn't going to do this. He goes on to explain to her why. Verse number 8, he says, "My master doesn't know what's with me in this house. He's committed all that he has to my hand. There's no one greater in this house than I am. And he hasn't kept anything from me except you, because you're his wife." You know, it's different. Potiphar didn't mind if Joseph ate one of the calves from the flock. Joseph could eat the bread from the grain in the field. Potiphar didn't care. But this was his wife. And Joseph knew. And he says, "You know, he let me have anything in the house, but not you. You're his wife." But it's interesting. You see, that's not Joseph's biggest argument. The problem we have in our society today is that for most people, that's their biggest argument is, "Well, you know, I wouldn't want to hurt your husband or your wife or my husband or my wife, and that's the only thing keeping people..." And so that's the only thing keeping people from getting involved. And so once they don't care about hurting the other person involved, they go on and do it. But they're forgetting somebody. Joseph didn't forget. Potiphar's wife didn't even thinking about that other person. But Joseph is. Notice what else he says. "How then could I do this great wickedness and sin?" He didn't say against you. It would have been a sin against her if he'd have given in. "Sin against myself?" No, it would have been a sin against himself if he'd have given in. "Sin against my master?" Well, no, it would have been a sin against his master if he'd given in. But he doesn't mention any of those people. He says, "How can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? The very God who has blessed him, blessed her, blessed Potiphar and all his household. Everyone is blessed because of God." And Joseph says, "I can't bite the hand that feeds me. I can't turn against the God who has protected me and brought me through all of these things. And how could I do such a thing?" See, to him, it's not about the lust or the desire. It's not about whether they'll be found out by her husband. It's all about God. Because God's the main character, not only in the Bible, but God's the main character in Joseph's life. And when God becomes the central character in our lives, it'll change the way we live. It'll change the reasons we do or don't do certain things. Because when we think about how it'll affect God first, instead of just how it'll affect me or somebody else, when we think about God first, and we think, what's this going to do to Him? Well, certainly didn't satisfy her. I mean, she doesn't care about God. She's one of Satan's little helpers, not God's. And so she keeps pestering him. You know, I've heard counselors talking to someone who is in an attempting situation on the job, and they'll tell them, they'll say, If it's a temptation to you in this job, you need to quit that job. You need to find work somewhere else. You need to get out of that situation. Well, see, that would all been great and good and fine, but Joseph was in a difficult position. He couldn't quit his job and go find work somewhere else. He was a slave. Potiphar bought and paid for him and owned him, and whatever he had to do, he had to do. It wasn't just a job that he could say, well, I quit, I'm going to go work for somebody else. No. It didn't work that way when you're a slave. And so Joseph had to put up with her constantly pestering him, bugging him. It says, day by day, every day she spoke to Joseph to come and to lie by her or to be with her, but he wouldn't listen to her. He didn't listen. And I have a feeling he probably did a pretty good job of staying away from her as much as he could. But see, sometimes his job as the manager of the household involved him having to go be in the area where she was. Now, usually in a big house like that, with servants and slaves and those kind of things, there would have been some others there. There would have been other servants, other slaves that would have been there. But one day, he had some work that he had to do in the house. And he went into the house to do his work. And there was nobody else in there. It was just him and her. What's he going to do now? Go give in? Going to say, well, nobody will know there's nobody here. Isn't that what people say all the time? Well, nobody will ever find out. They do surveys sometimes after. Well, if nobody could ever find out, if nobody could ever know, would you do this or that or the other thing? And it's amazing how many people say that they would do something as long as they thought nobody would ever find out. Would they commit a murder? Would they commit adultery? Would they steal $1 million? Would they do this? And a lot of people admit that, yeah, if I thought I could get away with it and nobody'd ever know, I'd do it. Now see, that's not integrity. That's not character. Joseph had the opportunity. Nobody's around. Just this once it won't hurt. And she grabbed him. Grabbed his coat. She said, come on. Come lie with me. What's he going to do now? Well, he does what any wise person should do. He runs for his life. The Bible tells us to flee youthful lust, to flee from these fornication. You think it says that just, you think of Joseph when you read that passage in the New Testament that says flee fornication? Joseph was the embodiment of the fulfillment of that command to flee fornication. He ran from her, unfortunately for him, or maybe fortunately. I don't know, sometimes God works through the difficulties in our lives too. But it seemed unfortunate for him at the time. As he ran, she kept hold of his coat. And so in order to get away, he had to just slip out of that thing. He had to leave it behind. Now, it wasn't a suit coat like I'm wearing tonight, obviously. But his cloak, his garment probably would have been more similar to what we, like a bathrobe that would just been wrapped around and tied, you know. But she grabbed the thing and she pulled his clothes off of him. And he had to run away. Now, he wasn't naked, but he had lost his outer clothes. And she still had them. Now she realizes she's got them. You ever heard that saying, hell hath no fury like a woman scorned? This woman who has been trying to get this man for no telling how long. She's been scheming and planning. She's probably the one that sent the servants out of the house when she knew Joseph had to come in to work so that she'd be sure who she was alone with him. She's been scheming it, and now she's got his clue. But she doesn't love him anymore. Now she hates him because he's rejected her advances. See, because it wasn't real love in the first place. It was just lust. It was just sinful desire. There was no love there. Love wants what's best for the other person. Love doesn't draw somebody into something that could get them killed or thrown in prison. Love doesn't do things like that to a person. So she starts to scheme again. She's got his clothes. So when she saw that, she called some of the other servants to her and she said, "Look what happened. He came in here to attack me. He was going to rape me. But I screamed. And when I screamed, he ran, but he left his clothes behind." It's a good story, isn't it? Well, the servants, you know, they don't know. They weren't there. They have no way of knowing. And so now it's just Joseph's word against hers. Who do you think Potiphar is going to believe when he comes home? Well, she's got his clothes right there. She's got his... Look what happened. You got this Hebrew. He came in here. Look what he tried to do to me. He tried to take advantage of me. Your loving, faithful wife. Yeah, right. But Potiphar believed it. Bought it hook, line, and sinker. And the man who had just the day before been trusted with everything in Potiphar's house doesn't get the benefit of the doubt. As far as we know, he doesn't even ask Joseph if it's true. He just throws him in jail. And that's the other thing about being a slave. You don't get a fair trial. You don't. You know, there's nobody that says, "Well, wait a minute, you're violating his civil rights. We're going to have to call a lawyer here." No. Potiphar just threw him in jail. Threw him into the prison because of what he did. But you know, it's an amazing thing. When God's with somebody and when they're faithful to Him, it doesn't matter where they are. Good things are going to happen. God will be with us through thick and thin. You know, we talked about with Jacob too, with the death of his father and the death of his nursemaid and the death of his wife and the death and now he thinks Joseph's dead and he's going through all this suffering and now Joseph's going through all this suffering. People today, you know, one little bad thing happens to them and they say, "Well, where's God? Why didn't God care about me? This bad, horrible thing happened to me." God's right there. If you'll trust Him, if you'll be faithful to Him, if you'll stay with Him instead of turning your back on Him and giving up on Him. Joseph didn't give up on God. Even after he was framed for a crime he didn't commit, thrown into the prison, he probably thought how fortunate he was that he was thrown in the prison and not executed. I mean, that's one way to look at, you know, Potiphar. He could have had Joseph executed for, I mean, you attack the man's wife. Now, he didn't have any real evidence other than her word for it. But, oh, that's a bad situation to be in. Joseph was in a dangerous setting. He was thrown in prison. Notice verse 21 again. Remember, this isn't about Joseph. It's about God. The Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy. Well, let's see. Your brothers wanted to kill you, but they decided not to. They decided to sell you. There's a little bit of mercy. You're sold as a slave, but you got into a pretty good situation, so there's a little bit of mercy. But then your master's wife lies about you and gets you tossed out and thrown in prison. But God's still showing mercy. The people today who haven't been through half the things Joseph had blame God. It's all God. God's being mean to me. God's picking on me. Yeah. No. God may be being merciful to you and you just don't realize it. You don't realize how bad it could have been if He hadn't been there. But He showed him mercy and He gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. and the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph, saying, all the prisoners that were in the prison, and whatever they did there, he was the doer of it. So Joseph quickly, almost immediately it seems, goes from being cast into the prison to being the top trustee. He's running the prison underneath the guard, underneath the jail keeper. He's right up there because God's being with him. The keeper of the prison looked not to anything that was under his hand because the Lord was with him and that which he did, and the Lord made it to prosper. So now he's not got a cushy job in a fancy house anymore. Now he's down in the dungeons and in the prisons, but he's still quickly elevated to the point where he is trusted. Well, why is he trusted? Yes, it's because God was with him. But why was God with him? God was with him because he was one of God's people, yes. But what made him one of God's people? He loved and obeyed the Lord, and because of that, he was a trustworthy person. People sometimes wonder why they can't move up in their job. They wonder why they can't get a better situation. They wonder why somebody doesn't trust them. Maybe it's because they're not trustworthy. Maybe it's because they're scheming, conniving scoundrels. Maybe it's because they're cheating and lying and stealing already in the place where they are. So why would anybody trust them? You see, if we'll be the kind of person that we ought to be, like Joseph was, then whatever situation we're in, whether it's at home, or whether it's as a slave, or whether it's in the prisons, people will be able to see quickly our character and our integrity. And they'll be able to see that God's with us if we'll be one of God's children the way we ought to be. Joseph is a good example for us. You know, of all the people in this family line, Joseph's one of the best ones we've come along so far. I mean, Abraham had that mess with Sarah and Hagar, and oh, what a problem that caused in his life. Isaac and Rebekah had that problem with all that favoritism they showed with those two boys. Jacob, he had four women, had four wives. You can imagine what kind of difficulties there were in his household. Then you read about his sons who want to kill their brother. You read about them wanting to sell him to make a little extra money and lie to their father. One of them's cheating everybody, cheats his daughter-in-law out of the husband she's supposed to have, and then winds up looking for... I mean, two of them slaughter an entire village of innocent people because of something that one guy that lived in that town did. I mean, you got one of the boys sleeps with his father's wives. Jacob's family was a mess. But somehow, despite all of that, Joseph turns out to be a pretty good guy. He turns out to love the Lord, know that he can't sin against God, that he's got to be faithful. He knows. That's an amazing thing to think that he, despite all of those things that went on in that background, Joseph still turned out all right. Was he perfect? No. Are we going to be perfect? No. But you know, we can know what's right and wrong, and we can refuse the wrong and do the right. Even to the point, like Joseph did, to where it may cause us some hurt. Now looking back on that circumstance, a lot of people would have said, well, Joseph, you should have just slept with Potiphar's wife, and then none of that wouldn't have happened to you. If you'd have slept with her, then everything would have been okay. You could have kept your position. as the head of the household there, you wouldn't have got thrown in prison. But Joseph knew better. Joseph knew that's not the way it works. Joseph knew that if he had done that, he was sinning against God. How often do we justify things? But if I don't do this, it's going to cost me. Well, but if I do that, I'm going to lose out. And we've got all these rationalizations, all these excuses for why we can't do or won't do what God calls on us to do. And we're going to do it a different way. It doesn't work. God's way is not only the best way, it's the only way. Tonight, if you're here and have been struggling with doing things God's way, maybe you think your life is all about you. You've got your focus in the wrong spot. If you are at the center of your life, then you need to move. And you need to put God in the center of your life. If you'll do that, the things around will begin to work themselves out. They may not work out the way you want them to. I'm sure if Joseph had had his brothers, he wouldn't have said, you know, I think I'll reject Potiphar's wife so I can get thrown in prison. And we're going to leave him here in prison, but I'm betting most of you know that that's certainly not where the story ends. Next week we'll look at the next turn that it takes. But again, when we're trusting God, even trusting Him through the bad times, we know we'll come out better on the other end. If you need to respond to the invitation tonight, please do so as we stand and as we sing.